see. I could go casual chic or dress for success.
With so many looks, picking out what to wear can be difficult. But with Walmart, picking out a fresh pair of glasses is easy.
Maybe it's an athleisure day.
That's because Walmart has top brands and styles for you to choose from. So it's easy to find the right frames for whatever you're feeling.
Here's my outfit of the day and the perfect pair of cat-eye frames to match.
New glasses to make your styles pop. Welcome to your Walmart. Valid prescription required.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Griplock, Foundation Disc Golf's weekly podcast. I'm Hunter, joined, as always, by Trevor. And before we get into today's show and take a moment to thank our sponsors, autumn is in the air, the pumpkins are in the patch, and our friends over at Manscaped are here to make sure that you don't carve your pants pumpkins when you're grooming, if you know what I'm saying. Make sure you're keeping things fresh this fall with the leaders in male grooming and their brand new 4th Generation Performance Package. Join the 2 million men worldwide using Manscaped by going to manscaped.com and get 20% off plus free shipping with the code GRIPLOCKED.
It's time to bundle up with the Manscaped Performance Package 4.0. Inside this package, you'll find their Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, Crop Preserver ball deodorant, Crop Reviver toner, performance boxer briefs, and a travel bag to hold all these goodies.
Yeah, make sure after you're done trimming your pumpkin patch and whacking those leaves, you do give your balls a boost with the Crop Reviver. Manscaped even threw two free gifts into their performance package that Trevor just mentioned, the boxers and the shed travel bag. That way you can remain comfy and cozy no matter where you are at during this fall season. So don't forget to get 20% off and free shipping with code GRIPLOCKED at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code, one word, GRIPLOCKED at manscaped.com. Make your balls a priority this fall and choose Manscaped. Your balls will thank you.
Fall disc golf. Is it fall disc golf officially back yet?
Fall disc golf is back. I feel like the MVP Open is the turn of the season.
Last two times I've been out to play, there's been like a somewhat steady breeze, and that makes, and I've seen like the leaves are like threatening to become yellowish, and that's like fall disc golf is back.
Yeah.
Fall disc golf to me means like my like definition of fall disc
golf. Tell me your truth.
Is like you go out and it's freezing cold, but by hole 12, you're sweating and you've got like your entire bag weighed down by all the layers you took off. And every time you throw a shot in the woods, you can't find your disc until you step on it because it's buried under leaves. That's like what fall disc golf means to me.
It's a beautiful season, really.
It's beautiful. I've lost discs in leaf piles that haven't been recovered till like the following spring.
I have not had, there's one of the first discs I ever lost that still hurts me to this day. It was a McPro Rock 3. I think it was a three-time, but it was the McGlow run that wasn't supposed to be glow. Paul still denies that this run exists, but I had it. I know it exists. When you turn the lights off at night, it glew in the dark.
Is that a word? Glue?
Glue. It glowed.
G-L-E-W, glue in the dark.
Come on, man.
That's just funny. I like inventing words, too. Like, I think that's funny. I'm not coming after you. It's funny.
So it definitely glowed. It definitely glowed in the dark.
It glew in the dark.
100%. That's irrelevant to this point, except for the fact that it's how I tried to find the disc later. It was like one of the first practices at college that I ever went to. We were doing this practice on Liberty's East Campus hole 3 down the hill.
Two is bad as well.
I threw my McPro, my McGlow as I called it, Rock 3. It was before the McGlow run existed. It was an actual just McPro that happened to glow. Threw it, hyzered out. Everyone on the team saw where it landed. We walk up to it. It's gone. Completely gone.
It's gone.
Buried by leaves.
It's gone.
But I'm like, so many people play this course. It's going to be found. Someone's going to call me back. I have my number on the back. I love this disc. It was beaten to perfection. To this day, never heard back from it.
I've had some
mysterious. I went out there at night with a UV light and kicked leaves up, shining back and forth so that I could like, hopefully like if it was buried enough, I could hit it with the UV light and it would glow back at me. It didn't work.
I've had a mysterious disappearance in the course too with a KC rock. It was on hole one. I just threw it like straight the middle. There used to be kind of like that little tree in the middle of the fairway and then just like some like shrubs around it. It's pretty open though. And I just threw it right towards that area. Seemingly just, it was just there. And then I never saw it again. I don't know what happened to it. It's like it went into a gopher hole.
which might be possible.
That is possible. Yeah, I have had discs that I thought were gone forever, and then I just like randomly stumble upon a hole in the middle of the fairway, and my disc is in the hole somehow.
Sometimes you see...
There's also, speaking of random animals and holes, another guy went to Liberty, Lance Brown. He was doing field work once in North Carolina, threw his disc, and a fox ran out of the woods, grabbed his disc, and took it back in the woods. Mm.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. He dropped it once he got in the woods because he realized it was just like a disc. So Lance got the disc back, but he was always like, well, what the heck? Like a fox just ran out, that's grabbed really a disc funny. Of mine, and ran away.
So does he have to play from where the fox dropped
probably
it?
Thought,
it was a field work.
Probably thought it was like a berry since like all of his discs are purple.
Probably.
You know, foxes.
They thought it was a massive, massive old berry, a flat berry. Really rare in these parts.
All right, MVP
open. MVP open. let's talk about some results here. We had Adam Hamm is taking it down by 3 strokes over Ricky and Eagle.
The scoreboard
tied for second.
Scoreboard's a bit of a liar there, though, because like he won by 3, but he might as well. It was close to the wire.
It was very close. So the reason he won by 3 was because Eagle was trying to get big on hole 18 because he had to end up throwing it OB on his second shot.
Kind of goofed on 17 and then
Hamm
as well.
He also goofed on 17, yeah. Let's just focus on Adam Hamm is first, the winner. It's his first Pro Tour win, which, Trevor, you predicted part of this back in January or February.
Yeah, everybody like seems to have developed this narrative that I like, because last week I said something about Adam Hamm isn't playing as well as he should this season. And at that time, that statement, like a win, at this point in disc golf, with how hard it is to win, a win changes everything. So it's like I think that Adam Hamm is one of the most talented disc golfers on tour. So like I was surprised he hadn't won a Pro Tour yet. That statement was correct. But back in February, I tweeted that Hamm is going to win not once but twice, at least twice on the Pro Tour this year.
If he goes back to back, your prediction will come true.
All I'm saying is that take was looking really cold, but now is heating up because it's coming to life. And people were like getting on that tweet and like going after all the people that went after me when I originally made it, like saying that their takes like aged like milk. And that was really funny. I thought that was great.
Aged like milk.
Somebody went after my dad replied.
Yeah, I remember that.
And was like, whoa, pump the brakes. And somebody went back in and replied to that and said they aged like milk. And I thought that was really funny.
I love they're coming after your dad.
So yeah, if he somehow gets another win, I doubt it, but it could happen.
Oh, it's only GMC. That's it.
That's what I'm saying. If he's
but he did win a national tour this year,
right? But it's like it kind of counts. But I said Pro Tour.
You did say Pro Tour.
So man,
he is apparently one of 4 MPO players to ever win a Pro Tour and a national tour in a season.
Well, I mean, who else has done it this year? Paul.
Paul's done it this year, has he?
He won a national tour.
Has he won a Pro Tour?
Yes, he won Des Moines.
Okay, so then Paul. Well, Paul's done it multiple times. So yeah. Paul was on the list from previously.
I'm saying this year, who's done it? Just Paul, Adam, and is Rick. Does Rick have a national tour? So hard to remember the national tours.
National tours, I keep forgetting.
They're very
exist.
Forgettable this year.
But Paul and Rick are on the list. I don't know this year.
I was just curious to know about this year, like where Hamm is. Arguably, you could say
he won on the Pro Tour. So
yeah, say arguably, like it's funny because like now you could say Hamm has had a better season than like Kevin Jones.
Yeah.
And Kevin Jones has probably finished higher up more consistently, but Hamm has got 2 wins. And that speaks for itself.
Yeah, 2 Elite Series wins.
Good for him.
But yeah, I think what we're just seeing is Adam, much like we've talked about this, so many other players on tour now have that top level capability where if they can put their rounds together across the duration of tournament, they can win. To where it used to, back in the day, it was like, if everyone plays their best, then there's only 2 or 3 people that can win. Now, if everyone truly plays their best, there might be 10 or 15 people.
Yeah.
If like everyone happened to show up at a tournament and everyone played their absolute best, more than likely, Eagle, Rick, Calvin, or Paul would win. But there's a lot more players that can get to that level now.
Does Hamm's has more? How many wins does Calvin have this year? Does he have any?
You're just going to make me look up so many stats. I
know. I'm just
for.
Thinking like it's
what
crazy.
What the heck, man?
It's crazy.
You're making us sound like we don't know anything.
It's crazy
now.
What a win does for your like season resume, because like going into the season and even as the season was like getting started, like Calvin is known as a guy that like comes in a lot of like top 3 finishes, but maybe gets like
Calvin's
one win.
Calvin's got to have at least 8 wins this season.
I'm just saying, I'm like, does Hamm's have like a better season than Heimberg now? Which like,
well, okay, so that just depends on. So Heimberg technically won Ledgestone, the co he was a co-winner of Ledgestone.
Win, though. That's a fake win.
So no, if you don't count Ledgestone. His only other win is the Vintage Open, which was a Silver Series.
Is Ham is having a better season than Heimberg.
You can't say that.
I can.
Because Heimberg is finished way higher consistently.
I'm a wins guy.
It depends on what you consider better season.
I'm a wins guy, though. Like, when I look back at this, now it's a little different in disc golf whenever those guys are like earnings are so important for those guys on their like tour. So like I bet you if you ask Calvin, he'd probably trade seasons with Adam right this second and he would take the two wins.
I don't know, because Calvin's in a position.
I'm a wins guy.
Well, really, he's not even in a position that he could get the Pro Tour regular season. All right, let me see.
Because, Hammonds has not been nearly as consistent.
So, Ricky has won a National Tour and a Pro Tour this year.
I think the list, because I don't think Eagle
Paul,
has
you're right, tour. Has. I'm going to see if Eagle has won one. We know he's won a lot of Pro Tours.
Right.
Has he won a National Tour? We got to look all this up live. Wait, this is supposed to be Connor's job. What am I even doing? We don't have Wi-Fi.
We don't have Wi-Fi here. Facts right
You're right.
Now.
You're right. We don't have Wi-Fi here. Eagle, Pro Tour.
I don't think he has a national tour.
NT. Where is a good NT? Yeah, he does not have a national tour win.
So that's a short list. Three
so
people.
So it's Eagle or Frick.
Eagle.
Paul, Adam, Rick. Paul, Adam, and Rick have a national tour and a Pro Tour this year.
Wow.
But it's a big time win for Adam too, because I think that Adam, how old's Adam? 21, 22?
I thought he was older than me.
Maybe.
We don't know anything.
I could have swore that he was.
This is like the podcast, like we need all these random facts that we don't know.
We didn't expect it. No, I'm pretty sure he's 22.
Okay. I mean, he's in his young 20s.
I Googled this last night because I was trying to find out his age. The dude doesn't post his birthday anywhere at all. The Pro Tour asked for his birthday, blank.
Blank.
Discraft has a slot
for
birthday, blank.
So you
actually
tried to find it.
I tried to find it.
Okay, so
but on Reddit, the closest hint I could see was in 2015, he was playing junior 15 and under. No, 16 years ago, or 6 years ago.
Oh,
so that puts him at 21 or 22.
Oh, wow. So
that's what I'm saying.
He's younger than I thought. Man.
So oldest, absolute oldest would be 23, but he would have just turned 23.
Yeah, wow, he's young.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So
I mean,
he's really young.
I knew he was in his young 20s, but I didn't realize, wow.
Yeah, and so...
That's crazy.
I think there's a big time thing, because Adam has known he has a skill, but once you prove it to yourself and prove it to the world that you can actually win, and win at a place like Maple Hill, I think this is also a big time for Discraft, because this could be... Adam could be emerging as like the next face of Discraft. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because he'll be getting into the peak of his career as the Paul Page... age bracket is getting right. Like towards the end of their career. So because he seems very happy with Discraft. So assuming Discraft can keep him happy, then I think this is a big time thing.
He's definitely whenever his contract is up for renewal, he'll be a big ticket item.
He's gonna be worth a lot.
I wonder if I'd encourage any player to shop around a little bit, but Discraft seems to take good care of their players. So,
yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting. I don't know when his contract runs up. We'll definitely have to look into that more this offseason. We'll have a list again of players who are going to be free agents and where they might go. Another big story here, I think, was Eagle.
Eagle
had a four-stroke lead coming into the final round.
He looked a little like old Eagle.
Yeah, I mean, he was... Well, the first two rounds, he was in cruise control.
Yeah.
It looked like he was untouchable. Nate Doss, I think, even said it was over.
Yeah.
After day two, people in our Discord were like, I'm not even going to watch this final round because Eagle's going to win. And you saw that on the live viewership. Mm-hmm. Number-wise, when the round started through like hole seven or eight, there was only like 5,000 people watching live. There was like no one watching because everyone going into the day was like, oh, Eagle's going to win.
Right.
And then as people started checking UDisc, it was like, hold up. Ricky's in this, Adam Hammonds is in this, and Eagle's fighting now.
Yeah, it tightened up.
Then the viewership started skyrocketing.
Eagle's
after that.
Back nine was abysmal. I think he was like two over through the last like seven holes.
He struggled.
It was absolutely his to win. And he started, both him and Hammonds, as it started to tighten up, started getting nervy. You could tell that some of their shots, Hammonds was just able to calm himself down by throwing like that one good shot. That like kind of brings you back down to earth. And Eagle, his struggles were really on the putting green mostly.
Yeah, I think on hole 15 on like the Jomez hot mic, you can hear him yell at himself.
He
like,
screamed at himself.
Why can't you even putt today? Or
yeah,
something like
he
that.
Was getting very frustrated with his putt, which like that. I mean, it could happen to anybody. There's nothing wrong with showing emotion, but like, yeah, you could tell that he was seriously kicking himself. And I mean, Eagle has not really shown that this year. Like, that's kind of been like that is something I would have expected from Eagle in past years, to kind of like have the lead and then like give it up. And
yeah, but he's like proven that he can win.
Right. Like this year, he has not shown that. So hopefully for him, like he can, you know, get that back on track. Cause like he's got a, that's one thing I'll say about, you know, Eagle could really cap off a crazy season if he can win US. And that is like the ultimate frustrate you course.
Yeah.
So like the guy who can keep his cool for four rounds is going to win USDGC.
Eagle is still currently my pick to win USDGC.
I mean, he did break his hand punching the ground last time, right?
But he was in the lead when he did so.
Exactly. Because that's when he can get the most frustrated.
I'm just saying, I think we're seeing it. This is a bad time to say it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, he just showed that he's still capable of that.
But he didn't.
He collapsed.
But he didn't, like, mentally, physically freak out this time.
No.
Like, he collapsed game-wise,
right.
But
he didn't have a complete meltdown.
No, all he did was, like, kind of yell at himself.
But
during that round, I mean, that's a prime situation to punch the ground and break your hand again, and he didn't do it.
There was definitely cracks in the pillars. I'll be interested. I mean, I thought he was invincible going into that final round.
Everyone did.
So,
I was very, very surprised.
He is still human.
I mean, yeah, and then once he started cracking, I thought Ricky was going to emerge.
I know, and then Ricky kind of blew it too a little bit, because he had a chance. 21.
He had a chance, and then on hole 16,
yeah,
Kevin Jones ace hole, he threw it OB off the drive, yeah. And his chances were kind of over at that point.
I thought, because, yeah, Ricky was swooping in. There's been a couple times this year Ricky's had a chance. Ricky and Eagle coming down the stretch.
I think Ricky and Eagle are the two players to beat this year.
Yeah.
They've proven themselves. I mean, we're late in the year now. It's been a crazy year, but I think Ricky and Eagle have been the two that have kind of emerged from the rest of the field in a way.
They're pretty much...
Well, Calvin is always up there, but Calvin, as we just saw, he's not...
He hasn't had that great of a season compared to...
He's having a great season, but he's not winning a lot at all.
Is that a great season for somebody? If you could... Here's my thing. If you consider yourself like... Like, statistically, if you just, like, average his finishing place, yes, he's having a good season. But, like...
So, if Calvin wins going into GMC, now does he have a great season?
Not a great season, a good season. Calvin, would you say, going into this year, we were saying Calvin was top three going into this year?
Yes.
And he's won zero times.
I was putting Calvin above Eagle.
Right.
Going into
the
year.
That's what I'm saying. Compared to the expectations, he's not having a
good season. Compared to the expectations, sure. But just looking at his season objectively.
You got to live up to the expectations. Like, these are expectations he's set by performing well. So he's performing not as well this year as I think he has, like, last year, for example. So
I feel like this year and last year are very comparable. It's just that last year he might have had like a win or two.
Winning, winning separates the good from the great. That's why.
Yes, but he's consistently finishing better this year than he did last year.
You got to win. Winning is a step above. Like, that's why Eagle this year, we're giving him all the credit, because in years past he hasn't been. Yeah, he'll finish great and play these awesome rounds, but you can't. Winning is that extra step, because it takes.
But you can't say Calvin's not having a great season.
He's not having a great season. He's having a good season,
a very good season.
Mm-mm. Nope, just good. If you're gonna be considered one of the top players in the game, you gotta have wins.
If you're looking at him, if you're looking at him as a top two player, like, Paul is not having a good season this year because he's not winning.
Right, and neither is Calvin.
But Paul is having a good season for someone. If like the 10th best player in the world had Paul's season, they're having a great season.
We overestimated Calvin. That's not how
sports. No,
we didn't. We estimated him based on what he's done in the past.
I got to look at Calvin last year. Maybe I'm forgetting how good Calvin was last year.
He won last year.
But, like, how much are we talking about winning? Did he win one event? Did he win two events?
I think he had two wins. I know he had at least one because he beat Paul.
Let's look at a stat book, shall we?
Okay.
Actually, I don't know. I don't know why I said that like I knew something at that moment. Let's see. Let's prove you wrong, yeah. Huh?
He had a better season.
So he won the Memorial last year, which was a pro tour.
So he did have at least two wins.
And then...
Because I know he beat Paul.
He won Jonesboro.
Yes. He had two wins. This year, he gets out of this season with probably a maximum of one. He's having a just good season.
Last season was better than this season. His worst finish was 11th at Idaho.
Right. That's
season.
What I'm saying. He was so consistently like first or second or like second or
well,
third
he,
last
he
year.
He had a lot more 10th place finishes.
I'm just saying that like my standard for Calvin was set off of what he did last season. And compared to that,
I'll admit I was wrong. I'll admit it.
Thank you.
He's having a good season.
Good season. That's
he's
it.
Having a, he's
players
you
that
know
are,
what? Mediocrity. Really?
Yeah. Players, only players I would say they're having.
I'd rank them 30th.
Players like within the players that are within like the top 10 that I would say are having a really great season this year is a pretty short list. And like Eagle is really the only one that I'm like, yeah, they're having an awesome season.
Yeah.
James is having an awesome season because he won a world title.
Yeah.
He's been pretty consistent. But like other than that, I don't really want to throw out the yeah, they're having an awesome season to really anybody else. Ham is would be one of them as well.
Yeah, because he's yeah.
He's young.
He's exceeding, and he's
exceeding his expectations.
Well, he's not exceeding your expectations.
Not
he's
yet.
Exceeding the world's expectations.
Let's be clear. Whenever I saw, like, I tweeted that about Hamiz after he was playing those events
Arizona.
In Arizona. And obviously, I know he wasn't playing against anybody, but his game looked so good. He was making every putt within like 80 feet. And I was like, this guy's got all the tools. Like, what could go wrong? But hey, you know, somebody's got to do it. You know, and I also find it very interesting that, like, that's the difference between him and, like, AB, because, like, Anthony Barella in those, like, early events was pretty much doing the same thing. They were, like, neck and neck, but, like, AB isn't really touring full-time, and, like,
no,
also,
he's still in school.
Right, so he's not able to put in the full work. As I would argue AB is just as or more talented than Hammonds. They're very close in talent-wise and age. So, like, I think that just shows that, like, when you're Hammonds and you're, like, putting everything into disc golf, with that talent, like that's what you have to do that if you want to get to the top. Like that's for all the young players. Like those guys are infinitely talented, super athletic, but like you've got to grind it out if you want to,
yeah,
really rise to the top. And a lot of that just happens because they're playing a lot of events.
Yeah, they're getting used
to
that pro tour pressure,
right? Yeah.
Another young player that had a slightly different storyline was Kyle Klein on hole 5 of round 1. This was a very interesting situation. We had a lot of, I honestly, probably 4 or 5 people tweeted at me saying, I can't wait to hear what you say about the Kyle Klein hole 5 ruling. And at that point, I didn't know what they were talking about.
Are people siding with Kyle on this?
No, they were just asking. They didn't know. A lot of people say Kyle's getting screwed. So a lot of people are going to be upset about what we're about to say.
He's not.
Let me explain what happened. Kyle Klein on hole 5 threw his forehand out over the water. It comes back on the far side of the wall, to my understanding. So the spotter raises his red flag, calls it OB. Kyle Klein sees the red flag, proceeds to the drop zone, throws his shot from the drop zone, walks up, putts from that spot, walks over to get his disc to find out it's inbounds. Talks to his card mates, putts from that spot, taking what would it be? He ended up with a 5 on the hole. However it all worked out. So the issue was, though,
This is tough,
is that he was getting stroked for practice throws from the drop zone and the putts and all of that. So that's how he ended up with the 5 versus whatever he should have gotten when he was really parked for a 2, essentially. So the issue that people are coming after is, like, he got screwed by that. He should have been able to either just play out how he thought it was because he was OB, or play from where he was because he was inbounds and he was flagged wrong. All that could have happened had he called a provisional.
Well, here's my question.
At the drop zone.
So you're going to tell me that if a spotter calls you out and you think you're out, so the spotter calls you clearly out of bounds, that you're going to walk up and call provisional because you don't think you're out?
I've done that multiple times. It's not necessarily that you don't think you're out. It's that you know the spotter can't make the official call and you haven't seen your disc yet. I've seen Paul do it. I've seen Ricky do it.
Okay.
I've done it in tournaments.
I'm just saying, like, I could have easily walked in the same mistake.
Anyone could have.
Yeah.
But the spotter shouldn't have called it, but the issue is the OB lines on the back side of the wall, not the front side of the wall.
Why did the spotter miss the call there?
He must just thought that the wall was the OB line.
That's on the MVP Open for
spotter
where to make
the thing
right
you have to remember is a spotter is not an official. So when they wave the red flag, that's not the official call. That's kind of showing you.
Yeah.
Realistically, Brody and I were talking about this on debate night last night. What is the point of a green and red flag? Because the spotter isn't the official. So you have to verify it.
I think, yeah.
So, like, in this case, the only reason Kyle got screwed was because he saw a red flag.
It is a little stupid because, like, that flag would make sense if you were playing stroke and distance and you needed to, like.
Well, she had to go to a drop zone. So he didn't. So. But if you're, like, on the fence, you should be calling a provisional either way. As we can see in Kyle's case.
I think the lesson is that, like, if there is any kind of doubt, that you just have to call provisional.
Yeah.
The thing about the provisional is it is completely free.
Yeah, so he calls a provisional, throws his drop zone shot, walks up, yeah, I am out of bounds, Okay, walked my drop zone shot. Walks up. Oh, I'm in bounds.
I will admit.
Good thing I called a provisional. Pick up his lie.
I will admit, though. Walk over. Super unfortunate.
Because, it is like, very unfortunate.
I'd have done this probably done the same exact
thing. It is very unfortunate. And in a roundabout way, yeah, it was the spotter's fault for calling him out.
Definitely
when he was
the
in.
Spotter's fault.
But players on the Pro Tour have to know that the spotters are just volunteers. They're not officials. They're not tournament officials. Yeah. Their flag doesn't make the call. So if you're back
flags.
On the land, you got to say, I'm calling a provisional just to make sure. Because I've seen it several times where a player's like, look, I know I'm out of bounds, but I'm just going to call a provisional because it's free.
Right.
And then walk up and be like, yeah, I was OB. But just on the off chance that, like in this situation, you were in bounds, that saves Kyle, what, possibly 3 strokes?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Just like that.
That's crazy.
Yeah. But the flag, I've never really thought about it.
That's an interesting
point. Doesn't really... It's good for the viewers at home, I guess.
Yes.
But even in this case, it wasn't, because it screwed us too. Because
right.
then, like,
typically,
if
though,
you're watching Jomez, it was a very confusing moment because he threw and then tapped out what you thought was going to be like a 3 or whatever it was going to end up being, 3 or 4. And then it popped up and said double bogey. And then during the flyover, the next hole, Germ had to explain what just went
typically,
down.
Typically, the spotter, though, is a good tool for both the viewer and the player. I think really what it comes down to is. It's just on the spotter. Because, like...
Well, I think the spotter...
It's not hard to know if a disc is in or out. And there are certain circumstances where it can be, like, very close. In that case, you know, all I say to that, how about just add a third flag? It's
yellow.
Well,
spotters, I've seen in that case where it's like...
both flags
they
up.
Wave both flags because
yeah.
they're like, I don't
want to
make
I think
that
that's the solution. If you're unsure, just wave both flags.
Well, so that's the issue, I think, here, too,
that.
Is hole 8.
Because most
the OB line wasn't super clear. I remember there was issues with it last year too.
Yeah,
or not hole 8, hole 5.
Hole 5.
I remember there was issues with it last year too, because I think Simon did a similar thing. I believe it was Simon last year, where the line and the wall weren't the same.
Yeah.
And so like you had to get your meter off. It might even been the water's edge, and they put the signs way up from the water's edge or something.
All this basically comes down to MVP. Like you got to make sure your OB is clear, and then you got to make sure all your spotters are very
aware of
what the OB is.
Yeah, like because to me, a spotter, like the most helpful thing they can do is be marking where a disc went out.
Yeah.
Because there's the eyes up there. That's right. Still not the official, because I've seen at Idlewild, for instance, hole 17, I've seen a spotter, the whole group walks up and they're like positive that the disc crossed across the green. And the spotter's like, your disc didn't cross across the green. And the whole card discusses,
and they're like,
it crossed across, we have to, and gave it to him. And the spotter's sitting there like, I'm telling you, I saw it, it didn't. But the spotter's not an official.
That's crazy. Maybe spotters need to be officials, because like that's kind of crazy that the card go up there and just bully
because the
guy who is literally right there at the green.
Yeah, basically what the spotter was saying happened is like the disc, this is completely irrelevant to this story, but the disc hyzered just right in front of it.
Yeah.
But when you walked up there, the angles and everything, like from the card, you're like, there's no way. But
right.
The spotter's like, I was standing right
That's
here.
That's kind of messed up.
It.
That's kind of messed up. You're like, no,
and
you're
so,
blind.
So
we all saw it from 300 feet back there.
Yeah, so the four people like, in the car were like, well, it's our decision. Like, if we all agree that it crossed
that
here.
If I was that spotter, man, I'd walk
the spotter was ticked. The spotter was ticked.
I'd been like, oh, so what am I here for?
It was a very uncomfortable situation. I was just
like,
standing there listening
out.
To the card, because the card's all discussing, and they're all in 100% agreement that it crossed.
That's messed up.
And the spotter's just standing there. He's like, guys, it didn't cross.
Yeah.
And they're like, you're not an official. I'm sorry. Like we're calling it crossed.
It's messed up. I'd have walked right
so
out
messed
before.
Up.
I'd be like, are you kidding me? Like you guys are really going to tell me from all the way back there when you have a way worse angle. And I'm sitting right here.
I can't think of anything that would make Trevor more angry than that situation.
I would have 100%
say,
just peaced out.
As the like, card, great. As the card, I had to agree with the card because I was standing with the card.
Mm-hmm.
And when you got up there, there's no way the disc got to where it was without crossing over the green in the air. But the spotter was like standing his ground, like betting his life. He's like, that thing did not cross.
I'd have to see the angles to like know for sure. But man, I would have been frustrated.
The spotter was not a happy camper. I saw that same spotter a few holes
brutal.
Later. I came back
That's
and it was
brutal.
A year where there was like no spectators, but I had a media pass.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was last year actually. And so there's no spectators due to COVID, but I had a media pass. So I was walking with Brody's group, might've been the one that made that call. And then I walked back to Paul's group a few holes earlier. And then I'm standing like behind Paul's group, but like in the grass area. And the spotter is yelling at me while they're trying to throw. He's like, there's no spectators allowed. What are you doing? And like, they're trying to throw. And I'm like showing him a media pass. I'm like, I'm allowed to be here. But I didn't want to yell back because they're right here trying to throw. And the dude's literally just chewing me out. And so I finally was like looking around and the players are looking at me and I'm like, and then the players are looking at the spotter because they're like, he has a media pass. Like, he's fine right there. What is the guy doing? And so then I just walked up to the spotter. I'm like, dude, I have a media pass. Like, I am allowed to be behind this card. He's like, I just thought you were a spectator. And that was all he said to me.
Dude, just having a bad day, man. I was like,
this dude is not having a good day.
He's heated. He was already heated up.
Yeah, he was very.
That is so funny.
But yeah, that has to be one of the most frustrating situations with a spotter. It's like,
just get completely discredited.
I've seen it also happen where like a spotter marks with a flag and then players will walk up and be like, hey, appreciate you for spotting, and pick the flag up and be like, guys, you think I cross here farther up? And the guys are like, well, you had to come back and bounce up there. There's no way. And then they just walk up 100 feet to the next spot.
Justice for the spotters, man. They're standing out there for like a free disc and like in the hot sun. And you're just going to walk up there and be like, no, you're blind. We saw it from way back there. Like, get out of here.
There's just some times where like, you're like, I know how my disc works. There's no way this is the last spot and bounce.
It's one of those things, I guess, where like if the spotter was also in a spot where he could have misseen it, but if the spotter's like running after the disc as it's crossing out of bounds and marking it, you better take his mark because like he's not an idiot.
And also, yeah. I feel like he wouldn't fight that hard for it.
The whole 17 was the most uncomfortable.
Positive.
Yeah, the whole 17, the guy was like, dude, you didn't cross in bounds. Like, that's the thing. No part of it. And they were like, well, how did the disc get there then? And he like claimed that it like hit into the water and went upstream or something.
That's reasonable.
And so, but everyone on the car was
water
like,
moves.
No, we saw it spike in right there.
If I was like not sure too, I'd be like, yeah, it could have. Like, I'm not completely sure. Like, that's up to you guys if you agree on it.
Yeah,
but like, if I was like, yeah, it was 10 feet in front of the green, I would fight. I'd be like, listen, guys, like, you're breaking the rules. Like, it did not cross.
Yeah, so the whole
do I have to gain from this?
The whole car gave him a tap out because he crossed the green.
That is wild. And
yeah, that was a very interesting situation.
That's crazy. Justice for spotters. Sheesh.
Back to MVP.
Brutal stuff right there.
One of the things that MVP is known for is the eight holes, which I always thought was a play on like a hole.
It definitely is.
No, it's a play on mass holes. Apparently, that's
what Massachusetts. Which is also
mass
a play
holes
on
a play
A-holes.
On a holes, sure. But apparently that's what like Massachusetts, I don't know if it's like UMass fans or if they just call themselves that.
It's all a play on the
same
thing.
Well, when I said that eight holes was a play on a holes, people in the chat last night were getting mad at me because they said it was mass holes.
How dare you?
Not a holes.
Like it's like the connection, it's like point A to B, but there's like one little like,
there's
the
a point
man.
In the middle because they're not calling themselves a holes.
How dare you?
They're playing on mass holes. Which I can see that because
those Massachusetts
mass
locals,
holes,
man, they are
mass holes, like I'm even comfortable saying it, whereas I'm saying a hole. So I can see where you'd want the eight
not
hole.
Not really important.
Not relevant at all.
It's all the same thing.
Eight holes is what MVP Open is one of the things you think of, right? Which I think this is a very golf style thing.
Yeah, sure.
Park on a hole,
it's
watch your cards come
it's like
through.
A sports fan sort of thing.
Yeah. But like, I have heard, and we talked about this on Debate Night, I think they talked about it on Nick and Matt Show, so I don't think we need to park on it for super long, but I did want to hear your take on it. I heard a few complaints or players complaining where they were getting unintentionally razzed by the eight holes several holes before or several holes after because of how loud they were being on hole eight. So
they're
like they're on hole six putting and they're freaking out on hole eight because someone just hit the island.
Here's what I have to say to that. Okay.
Yeah.
If that's razzing you, this little group of fans that are all cheering on one hole on the course, do you want the sport to grow? Because have you ever heard of like the tiger roar in golf? Like in golf, there are just like going to be roars of applause during random times of the event. Now it's a little more spread out in golf, so that's a thing. But like, that's just a thing that's if as disc golf continues to grow, you are going to hear roars of cheering during your round if you're not on that card where it's happening. Like that's just a thing that's going to happen. So like, I don't really know what to tell you.
Yeah,
like this,
I didn't understand where people were getting upset.
Like loud cheering, just because it's only on this one hole, like that doesn't like this is a thing that's going to happen with galleries. Like if you're at Worlds and you're on the lead card, and like somebody throws an awesome shot, they're all going to start screaming.
Imagine if you were like imagine, this, oh, this scenario didn't happen.
So like, I don't really.
But imagine if the scenario would have happened if World Championships would have played like the rest of to pro tour events and everything where FPO tees off after MPO.
Right.
And so there's a card of FPO players
finishing up
playing when James Conrad throws in and the whole world goes crazy on 18. This is a similar situation to like one of them being like, "Are you kidding me?"
I think disc golfers,
like,
sometimes,
of course they're not going to say that because there was an insane moment.
Can get a little soft sometimes when it comes to like distract. Personally, it's tough for me to identify with because you could scream and shout while I'm playing
and let it all out.
I do not. Yes, I do not care. Now, it's one thing when it's a sudden.
He doesn't care.
In your backswing, like if it's just like a sudden noise, but like. I think you just have to
that's
like
actually, that's actually kind of
like
rich.
Exhaling.
That's actually kind of yeah. rich because Trevor was a victim of an air horn prank on a golf course years ago.
That's an
and
air,
it still scars
that
him.
That is an air horn, not a cheer from a crowd that I'm already expecting to happen. I think that part of that is because this is just like a new thing slightly to disc golf yeah. is like fans cheering while you're like playing. But like I think you just got to learn to accept yeah. it because well, it's good. Like we want to encourage fans at the right time. Now I don't know the whole story like. If they shouldn't be making noise. Now, I know there's a hole in the Phoenix Open, the Waste Management Open, as it was most known by in golf. They have a hole 16 where they encourage, like they have all these grands. It's called the loudest hole in golf. They have all these grandstands. And the theme of that hole is that everybody makes as much noise as they can for the entirety of the hole, from teeing off to everything. That is an anomaly. So don't bring up that example. That's not how golf should always work.
But that's how I think that's kind of what the eight holes are.
If that's what
be.
They're going for with this event,
because they're like chanting players' names as they're walking down, like when
they
pop up.
Are they making noise
down.
While they're throwing? Though
I'm not sure if it's necessarily exactly while they're throwing, but like
if that's the,
they
if,
cheer for anything and everything.
If that's what they are going for, if that's what they're going for as a whole, then I think the event just needs to make that known more. Like, hey, hole eight is like the loud hole. Like, there's going to be noise going on the whole
time.
But
I feel like that is well known. Like, everyone knows about the eight holes.
I don't think so. But clearly, that just needs
to
be...
Or you get to hole eight, like, you're like, what is all that cheering? I'm so ticked off. And then you step up on hole eight, and they're like, Hunter, Hunter. I'm like, oh, thanks, guys. I'm not mad anymore.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, because, like, hole 16 at the Waste Management Open, like, you're going to hear that from, like, all over the
yeah,
course.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like...
So, like, but if that's...
I don't see this as a problem. No. I don't get where this is a problem.
No, I don't... As long as they're not looking over to hole six's tee and yelling jinx, like, in the middle of somebody's backswing.
Yeah.
Like... Yeah, I don't.
Because I think what people were saying, like what players were getting upset about, is they were cheering so loud, basically like when a player made it on the green, like they were cheering like they just thrown in a 100-foot shot. But I'm like, why is that upsetting?
It's just enthusiasm.
Yeah,
not a problem.
Like, that's great.
All those guys complaining probably threw bad shots and whatever hole they.
Well, yeah, and then they honestly, everybody's looking surprised people are like, yeah, you know, my round was going great till I got to hole five, and then I heard the eight holes in my backswing, and then I just couldn't get a rhythm again the rest of the round. That's why I shot 14.
You gotta like you don't
like,
even,
no.
Like disc golf fans are so friendly, you don't even know what it can be like as it's like these other pro athletes in sports, like the heckling they have to deal with and stuff. Like you guys.
You're
disc
lucky
golf
they're
is
chanting
so,
your name
golf
when you walk
so
up to
buddy,
the tee and not cursing you out.
Disc golf fans are so like nice and like want to be friends with the players so much. Like it's going to get a lot worse.
Yeah.
So, as like mainstream sports fans get into disc golf, like it's going to get worse.
Nick Carl made a great point on the Nick and Matt show when talking about this. And he was like, how is this any different than if you're on Chase Card and the lead card's behind you? Like you're going to be hearing them nonstop. Kind of like you were talking about the Tiger Roar. Like... If there's been galleries on lead cards of like 800-900 people,
yeah,
you think that they, or maybe even over 1,000 people, you think they haven't cheered for a moment that also happened to be the exact same time that James Conrad's on hole three putting?
Yeah.
Like, of course that's happened.
It's going
to
happen.
But you just have to, that comes with the sport growing.
It's part of being a professional.
Yeah.
Athlete.
Like, if you're going to be a professional and you want to be at the top level, you better get used to people cheering because they're going to start cheering on your card.
And obviously, we do not expect people to be like literally on your part of the gallery watching you making noise while you're throwing. That is clearly not. We want like there should be all quiet on the people around you. If a noise comes, it should be from a distance, you know, not on your card. But like it's going to like you can't just like say, all right, everybody over the mic, like all the officials, like, all right, everybody needs to be quiet right now because this guy on hole two is throwing. Like that's not going to happen.
Yeah. Well, so, also like you got to get used to it because if you put let's say that eventually there's 3,000 people. Watching you.
Yeah.
One of them might have to cough while you're throwing.
Yeah.
Like
part
one
of being a professional.
3,000 people, someone at some point is going to slip up while you're throwing.
Part of being a professional is learning how to maintain focus with distractions.
Yeah. You can't get ticked off and stare down a fan because he had a hiccup or his kid he brought with him cried in your backswing. Like, does it suck? Sure. But like,
just going to happen.
It's going to happen. You're a professional athlete.
Yeah,
that's what happens in sports filled with humans.
Yeah.
that's going to happen. There's no way around it.
Yeah. I'm declaring soft for the players that.
Yeah, anyone that complained about that, I mean,
soft.
But just look back at your round and be like, did that really throw me off? Or did I hit a tree and thank goodness I had their yelling in my backswing so I could blame it on?
Yeah.
What came first, the tree hit or the yell? I don't know. You know? FPO results, we had Katrina Allen winning by 7 strokes over Kona Panis in second and Paige Pierce in third.
FPO is such a mystery, man. It's not even like it's one of those things where like, oh, like all these players are consistently at the top and it's just a matter of who's gonna win on the final hole. No, it's like now Kat just beat Paige by how many strokes? Like
8
strokes. So like it's like there's just like random anomalies each event. FPO is so like impossible to predict.
Yeah.
And Kona's back. Like she was kind of have like beginning of the season, I was like, oh, Kona's like consistently gonna be like a contender this year. And then she kind of like fell off, like wasn't really like contending for any wins, and then there she came in second, lost by 7, but she was there.
Yeah. Put it all together, Katrina Allen's having a pretty freaking good season.
She's having a great season.
She has 2 Pro Tour wins, a World Championship win, and an NT win.
Katrina's having a phenomenal season compared to what I would have expected, because I expected a much more dominant Paige season.
And yeah.
When Katrina has her chances this year, she's taking them.
Yeah.
She's
and it was surprising to see Paige lose by 8.
Yeah,
but let's not freak out yet, because she still has 5 Pro Tour wins, a National Tour win, and a major win this season.
I'm just saying, like, it's not necessarily. It's mostly for Paige. The reason that I've been saying that her season hasn't been that great is not because of like the wins and stuff. We expect that from the number one women's player in the world. It's that when she's been taking losses where she's losing by a significant amount.
Yeah, like
where she's playing bad.
The reason it seems weird is Paige is losing to different players and by a larger margin than we expected, realistically. But I think what we're seeing, I think this is true for Paige and really for Paul, because they're both kind of, their stories are almost interwoven together on the FPO and MPO side, because both 5-time world champs, all that. And they've both been dominant for the better part of a decade. I think this is kind of like, this is a little bit of an identity shift season for both of them, really, because I think dominance in disc golf looks different now. Dominance in disc golf used to be you didn't lose. If you did lose, you came in second or third. I just think that's not what we're seeing anymore. Like, obviously this year, you can't argue that Paul had a dominant year.
Yeah, dominance in disc golf, the example would be to look at, like, Eagles season.
Yeah.
Where still, Eagles season is not what dominance looked like in 2015.
That's what I'm saying. 2015, Paul didn't finish outside the top 3.
But where he's won, like, quite a few times on tour this year and been the best player.
That is a dominant season now. I think that's where the shift is starting to happen is, like...
Yeah, definitely.
You're not going to see a player go out and be in contention every week. Every single week, every single time, and win more times than not.
Right.
That's not going to happen. If that does happen nowadays, that's going to be a heck of a lot more impressive, because now you got to beat such a deeper field. But for Paul's season, this is the finish. To see Paul finish this much outside the top 5 in a regular season, you have to go all the way back to 2012. He did it in 2018. If you include the Pro Tour finale, then he ties it. But I'm not including that, because the Pro Tour finale is kind of an anomaly. So 2012.
He also won a major that year, didn't he?
In 2018?
Did he win US?
Yeah. Yeah, he won US in 2018.
Pretty
but he still could win US this year.
He could. USDGC is going to change anybody's season.
That is still up in the air.
Which is why I love that. Majors are awesome.
But yeah, I just think the game's changed. The field's gotten better and deeper on both sides, FPO and MPO. And I think that what it looks like to be a top player in the game is a lot different. You can't rely on having everything be about winning anymore. Getting a few good wins throughout the season, like we've seen Eagle, Eagle realistically with a 3 or 4 win season is having a dominant season. He's at 5, right? I believe. Yeah. So Eagle's having a very dominant season. But that's just not the same as what it was 5 or 6 years ago. Or 6 years ago, I mean, players were able to win 10 wins in a season.
Yeah, I would argue that in this era now that we're entering, where the leaderboard becomes a jumbled mess each and every week, wins are more important, not only because of, you know, just how hard it is to win, but because it's going to be a lot more difficult to keep track of. Well, this, like, it's going to be way almost harder now to be like, to just string together a bunch of second and third places over the year and be memorable. You have to win now to be remembered that season. So a win becomes like your landmark for that season.
And that is true, because Calvin Heinberg, back to that example.
Right.
No one's going to be talking about
exactly
him
forgettable at the end of the season. He's been playing fine, but yeah, forgettable
been,
season because he's not
been
winning.
In contention, or he's been in contention a lot. And there's even been talks more in the middle of the season of if he was the best player in the world because he was the one that was consistently in second or third.
Right.
But without winning, people are going to look at the record books 3-4 years from now, and they're just going to see. I mean, Eagles going to be the clear dominance, but they're going to see a bunch of other names that aren't Calvin right now. And so Calvin can finish in fourth, third, all he wants, but you're right. Mm-hmm. The wins are what's going to separate you from here on out. And what's crazy, too, is if you put Calvin with a season like this where he's putting himself in contention a few years ago, he's probably picking up 4 or 5 wins. Because if you look at who he's beating week in and week out, he would have been beating the guys he needed to beat because there would have only been 3 or 4 of them.
Yeah.
Versus now you have someone like an Adam Hammes, where if Ricky and Eagle have a little bit of an off round here or there, someone can sneak in and boom, they have a win. Mm-hmm. Just like that. It's a much more exciting time, I think, to be a disc golf fan, and probably a much more stressful and like high pressure time to be a player, because wins are that much harder to come
by. I think it is more exciting for the young guys who are just getting into their prime, because there's not as much pressure to be winning each and every event. Like they can go ahead and they can say, like, let me just get one win this season, and like it's a huge success. But for the old guys who built their careers over seasons where they're winning 5, 6, 7, 8 times, it's like a lot more frustrating and high pressure.
That's what I, you know,
like, they can't do that anymore.
We're friends with Paul, so like I could obviously just ask him, but I feel like this season has got to be weird for him.
Yeah.
Like I part of me wonders if the reason we've seen him finish outside the top, whatever I just said it was, 5 or 10, outside the top 5 so much, is just because it's a shift, it's an adjustment, because he is used to, if I show up, I play good, I'm there with a shot to win. You know what I mean?
Well, I still think
if he plays good, he's probably going to be in the top however many, but it's not good enough to win anymore. Now you got to have great rounds every round.
I still think he's just been a little bit off.
He's been off this season, but I'm saying, I'm wondering if that's part of what's played into him being off the season.
Sure.
It's just how much harder it is to win.
And I do think it's a lot more difficult whenever it's difficult to go through an event knowing that if I slip up, you know, even just for a few stretch of a few holes, if I slip up, that could cost me.
Like, that's it. Yeah.
You've got to play so well. It's difficult, especially in disc golf, when you only play 3 rounds in most events. It is a lot harder to climb back into an event. And also, disc golf, it seems to be in disc golf where, like in golf, it's a lot more unpredictable what's going to happen round to round. Where it, like, because if a guy could just wake up one morning and his driver's off and he just starts missing fairways, he could just completely just blow up. Whereas in disc golf, when a guy like as good as like a Ricky or Eagle or Paul fires off 2 good rounds in a row and they're playing the same course again, it's like what it happened with Eagle this past week, but it's not super likely that they're going to just wake up and forget how to play the course that they've just been shredding for 2 weeks. Like, they very much know their game plan at that point, and it's been decided. So like if you cough up early in the event and you're kind of already behind, it is very difficult to climb back into it knowing that those other guys are off to the races and there's only 3 rounds. So like you really don't have much of a shot.
Yeah. With that being said, it's time for the fan favorite segment, Trevor's Trivia. What do you got?
This is a new one that I kind of scrounged up today. I think it'll be kind of interesting.
Scrounged. I like that word.
This is going to be a little Instagram caption game.
Da, 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 da.
I've got Instagram captions.
Why don't we have theme music for Trevor's Trivia?
You like stings?
What's a sting?
What the heck is that?
It's called in like a show or a podcast. Oh. Whenever you've got like a little theme music or a little catchphrase, it's called a sting.
You made that up.
I did not.
I'm just kidding.
Connor made that up. All right. So this, I've got some captions from various Instagram posts. Probably it's like mostly these are like from throughout the last like half a year. And you're going to guess which disc golfer put that caption on the picture. So it wasn't an audio heavy podcast. I just show you the picture and a caption, have you like match it up. But we're going to go this way. So first one, The first caption is, champions keep playing until they get it right. Who put that caption?
Oh, there's so many. I'm feeling Drew Gibson. Mm.
It's Ricky Wysocki. It's a very Drew-esque quote,
that
though.
Felt like Drew.
Drew could literally be, like, anything that is, like, mentioning, like, championship attitude or, like, anything along, like, inspirational.
Yeah.
Drew is very heavy on inspirational, though, so he would have, like, that definitely fit his brand.
That's what I'm saying. That felt very Drew Gibson-esque.
Okay. Next one. It's Maple Hill Week. Basically, disc golf Christmas. I wonder what's under the Christmas tree this year. See what you got for that. It's a tough one.
I mean, I don't like that caption. We'll start there. I have no clue.
It's more of like a fun caption. Like, you know, there's like certain guys that are only posting like pretty serious, like,
yeah,
like stuff. So this is like, it's a little more of a fun twist.
I mean, that could be like Big Germ.
Could be.
That's not my guess then.
I will say everybody that I've chosen for these, I'll give you a little more guidance. Everybody that I've chosen for these captions is like a top 15 player.
On MPO?
Yeah. Okay, I would argue they might even be close to top. Yeah,
my mind went over. I was thinking like maybe I was Kona Panis or maybe.
Yeah, no.
Okay,
so
we're sticking MPO.
I didn't have that much time to look.
Dang. What the frick? Who says that? Trying to think of the top players.
Read it one more time.
It's Maple Hill Week, basically disc golf Christmas. I wonder what's under the Christmas tree this year.
That's funny.
You're going to have to tell me. I'll guess Eagle, just to throw it out there.
Kevin Jones. Yeah, kind of surprised me.
I didn't expect that.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense now, but Kevin Jones' name never came to my mind.
The next one is Jobs Not Finished, Mamba.
That's got to be Paul.
Yeah.
That's got to be Paul.
Yeah.
There's no way around that.
Definitely, yes. Okay, I got two more. This one is probably my favorite. I hereby declare I submitted and stood atop Little Butt.
That's Eagle.
Yeah.
I saw that post.
That was funny.
That is a funny post.
He was talking about a mountain called Little Butt. And okay. Just in case you didn't know that. Last one. Another day in the office. Love what you do or change your path.
That could be Drew Gibson.
That's Drew Gibson.
Okay.
Yeah. I had to put in a Drew Gibson.
I was like, there's got to be a Drew one on here somewhere.
Yeah. Okay. Let me go on a little rant for a second because.
Go off.
Like, I was like, I came up with that idea to do this game and I was like, oh, this will be so easy and like so fun because like captions on Instagram. And I got this idea from the England soccer team, like their national team is a YouTube channel. It's really good. And they do this where they take like two players and they have them scroll through pictures or they get a picture and they have to see they have to guess what caption that player put with it. And they like give them different options. And so I was like, okay, let's like, this will be so much fun. Like, cause they have like all these like semi-creative captions and I already kind of knew this about disc golfs and disc golfers and social media in general, but this is like a sad reality that I was faced with where disc golfers on social media are so uncreative. All they post, I'm literally scrolling through every single post from these top players. For the most part, there's a few exceptions, but for the most part, it's just tournament summaries. Every single post. I came in this place at GMC. I came in this place at MVP. Little description of how it went. It's all their social media. You got to understand, social media is a tool. Like you can, your job on social media. Like, I get that these tournament summaries are a big part. A lot of times, like, it's in your contract.
Yeah, I would say a lot of times it's in their contract because they're made to do.
But, like, if you want to become a brand and likable, for the most part, on tour, if you want to have fans that not only see you as a player they like watch playing but feel like they know you, you need to add personality to your social media. You need to have them get a peer into your life. You have a very interesting life as a touring disc golfer. Like, not many people know what that's like to tour around the country and play disc golf and survive on tour. Like, you could have you could make a documentary about this. Like, it's a very interesting life that you have.
I wonder what happened to Paige's documentary.
So,
keep going.
We'll see it eventually. So, like, you need to, like, post some, like, creative stuff. Like, hey, like, at this cool spot that we found on the road going to this, like, we found this, like, hole in the wall restaurant while on our way to the MVP Open. Like,
give me something to work with. I'm just scrolling through, and it's just like
a lot of pros do have like Kevin Jones has a vlog on YouTube.
I'm just saying, and they all use templates too. That's the thing too. Like all their posts, like they have people do graphics for them.
That is an issue.
Those are cool every once in a while, but like I want to see a picture that you took.
That is an issue.
That's the point of Instagram.
When there's several pros now that have hired like a graphic designer, and that's everything they post.
It's like I'm just seeing a new poster.
Like it's not like I'm following Nike. Like I'm not following you as a brand.
I'm following you as a person.
I'm following you. This is your personal account. I'm following you. I want to see, like, take a selfie disc on the course. I guarantee this would actually be an interesting study. All these disc golfers that have business accounts, I would love to go into their insights and see the engagement and reach of a graphic post versus just a boring selfie. The graphic post looks way cooler. But for instance, on our Instagram, the Nick and Matt show is very graphic heavy because we're promoting the Nick and Matt show. And every week, that's like our worst performing post. Not because it's the Nick and Matt show or anything. It's just that that's the only post that we're making that has graphics on it.
Right.
It doesn't look like an Instagram natural post. So this week, I made it a point. I'm like, I'm going to find a way to get a picture that's not a Nick and Matt show graphic. I'm going to find a way to get a picture that is a picture.
Right.
And so I texted Matt because he had a picture of him, Adam Hammes, and Nick Carl. I was like, I'm going to post that.
I posted great.
And then I'm just going to use the caption to explain it's the Nick and Matt show.
Yes.
It's performing better than 95% of our most recent posts.
Right.
I think it's because people just like treat that. Like their Instagram pages as like a LinkedIn page.
Right.
Yeah.
Like it's like this is their profile.
It is.
But really, it's not. The point of Instagram is not for you to have a bunch of very professional pictures of yourself, because that's not natural for what Instagram is. It's meant to share what you're doing.
Right.
With people.
It's not the biggest.
It's like a window into your life.
It's the biggest opportunity for disc golfers to build a likable brand. And literally, there is almost nobody taking advantage of it. Like, you can make yourself so much bigger on tour. And guess what? A lot of manufacturers right now are judging your contract and your value based on how much plastic you can move. And that can have to do sometimes very little with your performance on the course.
Well, that's the reason that...
So, like, you have such a chance.
A great example is... And this is a great example across the board. Simon Lazat.
Right.
He didn't have to worry financially about his brand, any of that, while he was away with injury for pretty much over a year. Why? Because he had built such a big brand on YouTube.
He bought a house during that time.
Yeah. Even if the sponsorship revenue dried up somehow, if Discmania is like, well, since you're not playing, we're not going to sponsor you, they wouldn't do it. But if they did, he still was bringing in a lot of money per month on YouTube. Yeah. But then that also is the whole reason, not the whole reason, but that's a big reason of why Discmania is like, heck no. Like, Simon's so invaluable to us because it's the same thing with Brody, right? Simon could show up to a tournament and finish 60th place, and his YouTube content, social media he created that week moved more plastic than a Discmania player coming in fifth that didn't do anything social media wise. It's the same reason, like, Brody, a lot of times with Discraft, is able to move more plastic if he's coming in 50th, 30th, 20th, directly. If you're looking directly at, like, let's say he was at the MVP Open. MVP Open, if he came in 48th place, but he made practice rounds, social media posts talking about the meteor, blah, blah, blah. Because of the use of social media, people aren't following Brody to see him finish first, second, third. That's not the reason he has his following. He has his following because he's posting stuff regularly.
Yeah.
So he's able to move stuff regardless of his place, which is a lot more valuable to brands than players who are able to move stuff only because of their place on the leaderboard.
Yeah.
Because if you're like, hey, I'm constantly coming in 10th place, and you get a contract because of that, and that's the whole reason you have a name, and then the next year you come in 20th every year, what value do you hold
lost
now?
Your value, yeah.
Because now it's too late to build a brand.
And that's the thing, too. When you have a social brand, you can capitalize off of, like, sports in general. There are games that involve like highs and lows in your career. So when you have an active social presence, you can capitalize off of a hot streak. You get hot 1 year on tour and you become a big name and you become likable, and you can stay relevant for years and years and years on tour because people still follow you on social media. Like this happens all the time in other sports, especially on the PGA Tour. You have got players like Ricky Fowler, for example, is a great example. That guy, when compared to players who are way less popular than him, has not won nearly as much. Now, he has had a successful career. He's a great golfer. But his social presence and likability due to that presence has created his fan following. And whenever he's had hot streaks in his career, big wins in his career, he capitalizes off of that because he's already there. He's already has a presence on social media. And then it gives you this like long-term relevance. Like it is the most unused tool in disc golf right now.
I think it's the biggest one
not
too.
Only like, by not only by players, but by companies.
Oh yeah.
Companies are just as bad. You can scroll through, I'm not gonna drop all these names, but you can scroll through certain big companies in disc golf's Instagrams and see very bland templates throughout. It's a problem.
Yeah. Well, it's also, I think if you're a player on tour, one of the biggest things you have to worry about until you're a very top player is like job security and a steady flow of income. Mm-hmm. Social media, if you're able to use the fact that you're on tour and build your social media, it can provide both of those.
Yeah.
To where in the off season, you don't have to go pick up another job anymore because as long as you keep your vlogs going every week or keep a video going every week, it can provide income that you can fully live on.
Like there,
and then you become your next contract. You have a new negotiating tool.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I know that on the pro tour I was only 20th, but I've got 100,000 followers.
I've got more followers than almost everybody on tour. Yeah. Like that's a valuable thing.
And it's way easier to track. Like, yeah. Hey, look, I made this trackable link to your site. I can tell you I drove X amount of people per story I posted directly to your site to buy this disc.
It is
like it's all trackable.
Disc golf is.
I don't know why I'm so upset right now.
Disc golf
is
making this like big leap towards like professional status right now, and the one thing that is getting severely left behind is social media. And I'm so confused why, because even like these players, it's not difficult. It's not difficult to post on Instagram consistently. You have, like I said, these people have interesting lives. They are touring the country playing a niche sport. You have an interesting life. It's not difficult to find something to post. I mean, personally, if I were on tour playing disc golf, I would have somebody touring with me whose only job is to film and edit and post on social media and help me post on social media to have a social presence, because I think you could make the money back that you had to pay them very easily.
Yeah, the only risk would be the initial investment, because if you can cover the initial investment in a person like that, you're going to make that money back year after year.
There is still nobody that is doing like a well-produced like touring vlog consistently. And I can tell
because
you...
Well, because they're all... And this isn't on them. They're all filming it on their phone and having to edit themselves.
Right.
If you're not someone who enjoys filming and editing your own videos, that's going to suck.
Yeah.
And if you don't have accountability, one of the only reasons that Foundations YouTube was consistent at the beginning was because I had accountability to the other owners. Of like that was something we had to do, because I was the person who like filmed, edited all of that. There were weeks where the last thing I wanted to do was sit down and spend a few hours editing a YouTube video. If it was my YouTube channel, we wouldn't have been consistent. But because I had other people keeping me accountable to it, and like other people that I would have let down if I hadn't posted,
right?
We've never missed a Tuesday upload. And so now we're 3 years in, and now we upload 2 times a week, and now I don't even have to do it because I was able to hire Connor.
What up?
Just so I can provide an example, like I'm looking at Ricky Wysocki's social media page. He has 100,000 followers. He's a pretty big social following, but a lot of that is just because he's such a big name. He has not had an organic Instagram post that wasn't a graphic that was just made for him since, I mean, this is like, there's a video that was made for him in July, but that doesn't really count. I got to keep scrolling back. I still haven't found one.
Wow.
Here is a video about him talking about a restock. That doesn't count really either, but that was in May.
Oh my goodness.
This picture here, this was not made for him. It looks like somebody took a picture and sent him to him, but that's valid. May 6th. I'll count that one. That's the last time Ricky posts an organic. Let me find, Kevin Jones is another good example, I think. Okay, He posted a picture.
Kevin Jones, I feel like, is decent at social media overall. I know he started using graphics on his Instagram a lot.
He's still like, look at all these posts. Like 90% of them when he started using these are now these graphic posts. I think that's like plaguing disc golf right now.
Yeah. It's a newer cool thing to use sparingly.
Yeah.
Like throw one in here and there and it'll get really good engagement. Once it becomes all you post, then it's going to tank.
On my Instagram feed, I would rather see... And maybe you guys think differently, but I would rather see, like if you're doing a tournament summary, I would rather see just a picture, a naturally taken, like well taken photography picture of you throwing a tee shot or making a putt on that course, rather than you throwing surrounded by all these different colors and like logos and stuff, like a graphic.
I feel like Drew Gibson's Instagram is a very good representation of it, because
Drew, yeah, you
know, he does have a lot of very professional pictures that aren't quite relatable for everybody because they're not iPhone pictures, but they all really do a really good job representing his personality. Because yeah, even the ones that are very, like, really highly produced pictures, they're all, like, a lot of times they're goofy.
Yes.
Or they're, like, they very much show his competitive or, like, silly personality. Yes. And then he still has a mixture of, like, funny selfies in
yeah,
here.
Yeah, Drew's and, like, is not bad. What
here's
I was
a great
saying,
example with Kevin Jones. Back to it. That picture that you said, that's yeah, just a picture of him, not right, a graphic. 4,522 likes.
Yeah.
Okay, because my account, I can still see likes. A lot of people can't. Don't know why. Yeah. Next post, it's a graphic. 2,000 likes.
Right.
The next graphic, 1,800 likes.
The difference...
So that engagement and reach right there is over twice as much. And that's just the difference between... And then the post right before it. So 23rd to 27th, post before it's a graphic, 1,200 likes. Post that's just a picture of him, 4,500 likes.
Yeah.
The people liking it, sure, some of it might have to do with the caption, but the majority of it is... You got to be able to stop the scroll.
Right.
And if I scroll in, I see a graphic, I'm not stopping and reading the caption.
Right. That's the thing, because the difference between Drew, like you were mentioning, Connor, and like mm-hmm. Kevin Jones, like some of these Kevin Jones ones, this looks like a profile picture, this graphic.
Yeah.
It's him like discolored with his logo. It just looks like a profile picture. Whereas Drew, a lot of the ones that he does that he has the guy make, like here's Drew on the Wheaties box, the edited.
I'm liking that every time.
Right. That is yeah, a, that is a post. That
I don't
somebody
know
made
who
him.
Drew's like social media person.
He
is,
did
or,
one.
Like, his graphic person.
They might
is.
All be the same person.
They're amazing.
He's
they're
done
so good.
Ones where he's like edited onto album covers, stuff like that. Now, some of his are kind of the same thing where I see this looks just like a profile picture or something very generic.
Yeah.
It's just him with like his logo and stuff.
Now,
but the creative ones are different.
As a graphic designer, those edits are
they're really
sick.
Cool.
They're
yeah,
very well yeah, done. Great. So I don't want it to sound like we're coming
no,
after whoever's
no,
doing the
there's
designs.
Nothing wrong. The edits themselves
they
are well
very,
done,
very talented, clearly. Much better at the graphic design than I am I could ever
they
be.
Just don't, they
but
don't control
they just,
the algorithm.
I just don't think they work well with Instagram.
Yeah.
It's the whole thing.
They don't work with the algorithm on
I think
Instagram.
I think it might be a graphic designer posting it, not a social media like.
Yeah. They're two different things.
There's a mm-hmm, place for them.
Yeah. Well, there's a tangent you didn't expect.
I would like to say that I appreciate, Trevor, you giving credit to the soccer team for that idea that you got for
yeah,
that game. Because yeah, it's about time that somebody in this company...
Yeah,
somebody in this company
ridiculous,
needs to start doing credit.
Yeah.
If I am fed one more the idea that one of you two steals from another channel...
I mean, after we took that idea...
The amount of unoriginal ideas is ridiculous.
I mean,
ridiculous,
I heard really, that I heard that Dude Perfect with all of their subscribers is like been really sad that we took their all-sports
video. Yeah, you
actually
you need to stay hush with that. They're coming after us pretty hard. I'm having to deal
we're
with
we're going to fight a legal battle.
It turns out a channel with 60 million subscribers cares a lot about what a channel with 60,000 does on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
So I'm really having to struggle with
that's
that right
tough
now.
And actually yeah,
especially considering it was on a disc golf course instead of a golf course. They were really
and
mad and
all,
that I saw it with Sidemen first instead of Dude Perfect, but yeah, they don't care
and
about any of those details.
We forgot that we used one of the footballs that they handmade
yeah,
yeah, without giving them credit for
they actually invented
it, so
football.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Steady Ed's actually coming after me right, for how much we play disc golf, too.
We need to calm down.
If you can't tell, those comments really get under my skin. Mainly because half the time, we have no idea who you're saying we're copying. We'll do an idea, and we're like, that was a sick video. Someone's like, are you kidding me? You
didn't
see my video?
We live in an era
video?
Where media is just being chucked into the open all day, every day. Like, we cannot keep up
I'm
with
like,
all
no,
that.
I didn't see that video. What?
We
I
should start a new segment
watch.
Where we say, all right, go ahead and comment below what YouTube video you think is completely original.
And we'll
and
find
we will
where they ripped
react
it off.
React. I just... And... talk about how unoriginal every part of it is.
I just want you to know that we have never once sat down and been like, yes, let's copy that.
Yeah.
Dude Perfect, yeah. I will agree to that one. The
well,
Dude
yeah,
Perfect all sports
yeah,
battle.
But that's inspiration, not
but
like...
we also didn't play it on a golf course, so you could say we didn't directly
and
copy
we're also,
it.
And we also realized that that video came out years ago, so it's not like we're stealing anything from them.
Well, also, how silly would it have been? We would have got made fun of more if at the beginning of the video we'd be like... You know, before we get into this video, I just want to give a huge shout out to Dude Perfect for doing this video first. Like,
yeah, like what they're
who
not
would
even,
we think we are if I were to shout out Dude
they're
Perfect?
They're on a different level.
Like,
than
they
us.
Don't give a rip what we do.
Yeah,
they probably barely even know what disc golf is. They're probably like, oh yeah, that's that frisbee thing Brody does every once in a while. Like, the frick do they care what I did on an all sports disc golf challenge?
Come on now,
go
all right.
On.
Give me another topic.
All right. Well, speaking of YouTube, first off, Paul's channel recently hit 100,000 subscribers, so congrats to Paul.
Ooh.
Most recent video on his channel, though, shed some light onto what could possibly be an issue in the future with grip enhancers. So he basically tested a bunch of grip enhancers that
Paul kind of is kind of a narc, man. He just kind of like, what if there's all these players on tour that are like using them and they're like, well, dang, Paul, like, thanks for chucking that into the headlights.
He tested a bunch of stuff that the MLB has outlawed.
It's a hot topic right now because guys in the MLB were using there's been a history of grip enhancers that are illegally used in Major League Baseball. That you're allowed to use rosin that's like on the mound for you to use. Typically, the old-fashioned one is pine tar. Guys would hide it on their neck or on their glove. And what they're doing is they're putting it on the tips of their finger to get more RPM on the baseball. You get more action and movement, and you get more velocity because it's more spin rate. So this prompted, I guess, Paul, because like the newest ones that guys were using in baseball, it like became like a big thing where they were using like this thing called spider tack was a popular one, but they were harder to see and detect and they were pretty effective. And it got to the point where so many people were using it in baseball that everybody had to use it. You didn't have a choice as a pitcher because if you didn't, you were just losing.
On the bench who was using it was going to jump you.
Yeah. So like basically the MLB cracked down big time to now they can do random checks where literally these dudes are pulling down their pants practically in the middle. I'm not even kidding you. They're like undoing their belt.
I've seen some of those clips where a guy's been checked like four times in one game. Yeah. By the fourth time, he literally just undoes everything. Yeah. He's like, here I am.
Managers can like request a check to make sure they don't have any illegal substance. MLB has cracked down on it big time, which in baseball, I don't have a problem with that. Like,
yeah.
It is
Well, so that's the whole question is, do you think that these type of grip enhancers will actually be banned in disc golf at some point? And if so, what do you think it would take for that to happen?
I think all it takes is one player becoming known for using it on tour, like to where it becomes, you see them doing it on coverage, then it's like obvious they're using it. And I think the PDGA will ban it.
Well, it shouldn't be. Here's the thing, is if you feel like you have to hide it, then in your mind, you've already told yourself it's illegal.
No, I think they're just...
Right? Is that not a good train of logic?
No, I think they just know that... No, because
it could be for competitive reasons.
You don't want your competitors to know.
Right, I think
you want to have the leg up.
But now there's a video out there that everyone's seen.
And I think also...
That you can actually use it, and it works somewhat.
I think also that players just may also know if they're using it, that like if it becomes mainstream, it's going to get banned by the PDGA. They just suspect that. So thanks to Paul for expediting that process. But here's the thing. The difference between baseball, where this is used, like football, there's been things with like guys using like the stick'em on their hands, receivers to catch the ball. The difference is in like baseball, for example, you are using that advantage against a batter, right?
You're straight up stealing the point I told you yesterday.
Well, no, I also had that point.
Come on, man.
I'll let you say it.
No, you go ahead. You already started.
No original content.
No original content. Trevor's even stealing ideas
from me. It's not like that.
Go ahead, then.
Okay. I'm just saying that in baseball, you're using it against a batter who has nothing to combat that advantage, right? So it's like you versus another person, you getting an advantage outside of the rule book, and he's not.
You're stealing it word for word from me. At least switch it up some.
I'm pretty sure we harmonized into that point yesterday. We started talking and we finished each other's
sandwiches. My whole thing with that is like there's not something that makes it easier for the batter to hit. You know what I'm saying? You just have to have reaction time in that. Or in football, like you brought up, if like someone has stick'em on their hands or on, I mean, the NFL's gloves might as well be sticky substances, but that's a whole different thing. But when someone's going up to sky you and grab, if it just happens to stick in their hand when you played perfect coverage, there's nothing you as a defender can do.
Break up the pass.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do to stop that.
Right.
Whereas in disc golf, my gut reaction is that this will be banned at some point.
Yeah.
But I don't think it should because, like, what advantage is it really giving?
Because everyone can use it.
Right.
Yeah, it's the same. I see it like a rangefinder.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
I would argue that the rangefinder, because like what they found in that video, I believe, and what we had heard from people is that what it really is giving you, this grip enhancer, is not really a distance advantage, but just a grip advantage. So it's not even really like it's going to give players an advantage, like they're going to get better, but it's almost going to just help them with consistency.
Yeah.
Like just like have a better grip. And this already happens on tour because some guys just have drier hands than others. I am not one of those people. So I could say I'm at a disadvantage already.
But in certain times, you're at the advantage if it's really dry outside.
Yeah, because I would disagree because I would say a lot of times discs are slipperier in my hands.
I couldn't even know.
It depends on the temperature.
But we also are two extremes right here. Yeah. Like the exact opposite.
But I think that's what I'm saying is like, I don't really, like, is it an advantage?
I would say the rangefinder is a bigger advantage.
But it's almost like, to me, it's in the same category as having a really good chalk bag.
Well, I mean, baseball, they're allowed to have rosin, but not. So like there is like, they draw a line.
Well, I think that's
baseball.
Where, but that's what I'm saying. I would assume that's going to be the line draw in disc golf.
Yeah.
But I'm saying in baseball, it makes sense because you need to be able to dry your hands off to get it back to natural feeling, but then you shouldn't be able to go beyond natural in baseball because you're directly affecting someone.
Right.
This, you're not, it's not like, oh my gosh, well now Eagle can throw 1,000 feet instead of 700 feet. It's like, oh my gosh, now Eagle can throw as far as he could already have thrown consistently.
I do think
it's
you're right,
like,
though.
He didn't get better. In baseball, it makes a player better.
Yeah.
It didn't make anyone better in disc golf. It just allows them to have more confidence, basically.
I definitely think you're right. I think it will get banned.
It will get banned.
Because I think the PDGA just likes kind of being big and bad. So like they'll just be like, let's keep the sport clean.
I think it's just
clean.
That gut reaction of like,
when you
it
first,
needs to be banned.
When you first hear it and you just don't even think about it, and then like the circumstances in which it's going to be used as well, which are kind of like sneaky circumstances, they're going to just be like, oh, we need to ban this. And they're going to do it. But does it need to be? Is it really that important? Most players probably won't even end up using it because they'll probably like not like the feel of it. I haven't tried it yet.
I feel like as much as it can lead to you maybe getting a little more RPMs on the disc, it could also lead to more grip locks.
Yeah. There could be side effects. I don't think it's like a hot topic that needs to be like, we need to squash this before it becomes a problem.
No, that's what I'm saying is it's very, I'm pretty confident that if it got to where it's being used on tour, players who weren't using it would be upset that it was being used and complain until it got banned. But I just don't understand the logic behind
banning. Here's the other thing. In baseball, whenever guys were using those substances, they were pitching significantly better. I just saw a stat that Yu Darvish, before the crackdown era, as they're calling it, had a 2.45 ERA, and since they started that, he has a 6.8 ERA or something like that. Like, guys are pitching way better before. Like it's drastic. Whereas, like, in disc golf, I don't think we're going to see, oh my gosh, Eagle McMahon, since they banned those substances, is now finishing in 15th every event instead of contending for wins.
No.
That's exactly not going to happen. So, like,
but you also have to think,
it's a huge difference.
Baseball, it kind of ruined the game to a sense, because one of the most exciting parts of baseball is the actual hitting and running the bases.
Right.
So when you make that part of the
baseball
game,
baseball is super, super anti-pitcher because home runs are
So when you make that part of the game of the actual hitting harder, then like you need to ban whatever substance.
Watch
this season.
Walk up
because you're
catch basically.
Yeah. This
disc
season,
golf, you're making it more like if it does make them throw farther, you're not really necessarily ruining the game because that's the most exciting part of the game.
In baseball, this was a very pitcher dominant like season starting out. Like they were on track for like more no hitters than ever in the season. Like it was like guys were just mowing down batters, and Major League Baseball, like that was one of their big motivators to just crack down. They're like, all right, we need the hitters. Like they've done things before, like make the juice the baseballs, make them more like active off the bats. Like they're always trying to help hitters. So,
which makes sense.
It does.
I think at least
poor pitchers, but
well, yeah, it sucks to be a pitcher because I also feel like a pitcher, the only stat that's ever read about you is negative unless you do something crazy.
What are you talking about?
I don't know. Whenever I hear about like, I don't know. I feel like the only time I ever hear about
baseball.
A pitcher is, well, that's what I'm saying. The only time I ever hear about a pitcher is if they did a no hitter, but I hear about almost every home run, like all the time. I see clips of home runs.
It takes like you're saying, it takes a lot more.
And then like,
as
if you're watching, it's like,
you're right.
The pitcher's given up X amount of hits. And he's like, poor guy.
It's kind of like how like you never hear about the goalie in basketball. Like, because, you know what I mean?
Same, exactly, yeah.
It's like, I think my brain is in a somersault.
No, the goalie in soccer is actually, I know that's not, you're making a joke, but the goalie in soccer is another like kind of thankless
right.
position.
You only hear about when they get scored on.
Yeah.
Even though they do a very important job.
If they get a shutout, then you hear about it. Or if they do something crazy.
And honestly, a lot of times when there's a clean sheet, as they call it, you hear about the defense more than you do about the actual goalies, keeper.
There's just some thankless
jobs
in sport.
Justice for the keepers.
There you go.
There is just a lot of people that need recognized.
Yeah. The spotters, the keepers, the goalies in basketball. I mean, they're all going
That'd
under the radar
funny,
right
like,
now.
Mount Rushmore, in part of my take, is like the unsung heroes of sports. It's probably already been done.
Probably.
Anyways.
Stop ripping off part of my take.
All right, let's jump into...
I didn't even say anything.
Yeah, how dare you copy them, man? I'm surprised we haven't got called out for copying a podcast yet.
Let's talk about GMC.
Let's talk about GMC, the
Personally,
Green Mountain Championship.
I prefer Ford. I had to say it.
That's funny.
Thank you.
I actually really want a GMC. But we'll we'll talk about that in the banter.
You would.
Talk about my dream truck in the banter.
You love government bailouts. Just kidding.
What?
It's GM. I was just making a joke.
Oh, GM. Do they make GMC? General Motors?
Let's just move on.
I don't know anything about cars. GMC could stand for General Motor Cars, and I wouldn't even know. MPO. We're just going to stray into predictions. I love GMC. I think the courses are amazing. Smuggler's Notch is a place I've always wanted to go to. I've never made it up there. Cool.
I've decided Vermont. After watching MVP this past weekend that like we need to get up
we
there.
We got to get up there. Next we got to get up to MVP there. In Vermont. It's 2 weeks back to back. We got to do it. On the MPO side, I am picking Chris Dickerson to win. Eagle McMahon to come in second and Ricky Wysocki to come in third.
You were just like the king of awful picks lately. Dude, Michael Johansson, two weeks in a row.
We looked at it last night on debate night, and my top three prediction last for MVP came in 11th, 21st, and 46th.
Yeah.
That's not very good.
Yeah,
I also took Kyle, so
yeah,
we both died on that hill. But I'm taking the defending champion, Kevin Jones.
Bum, ba, da, bum.
He's still due. He's been due for since like the Worlds. He's been due. So like, come on. I got Eagle in second and Ricky in third.
So we have the same second and third. Yes. It's just who we think's going to win. I like picking Chris and James Conrad and Michael Johansson when we get to the stretch of the tour because like it's Woods
and
golf.
But they're not proving you right.
Chris Dickerson is going to freaking win this. Is he even playing this weekend?
Why
did I make this prediction without him, without looking at the thing?
Uneducated.
I really feel like I just was like,
oh,
I think Chris
Dickerson.
I don't know
that he
win.
Is. Now that I
say it out loud.
That'd be embarrassing.
That'd be really embarrassing.
That would be really tough.
I'm embarrassed.
No, he is playing.
Thank goodness. You really dodged the bullet there.
For some reason, I was like, did I make those predictions? Because I have in the past made predictions without looking because I'm like, I know
who I'm
going to
pick. Is Dickerson having the most underperforming season of anybody this year?
As far as like two expectations?
Considering he won player of the year.
Last year?
Yeah.
Or yeah. Yeah. That could
He's
be
He's
got
to start touring full schedule.
I think that is a big part of it.
He's got to. Or his career is just going to stall.
Well, it's going to start off with a win at GMC.
I like Chris Dickerson.
Then he's going to defend his USDGC title, and then he's going to win the Pro Tour Championship, and you're going to eat every word you just
said. That'd do the trick if you just defended in USDGC.
Dark Horse picks. Last week, we didn't even talk about this for MVP.
No, we didn't.
I won.
Connor lost.
I lost.
Mark and Shane. Is that who you picked?
Shane Wyatt.
Mark and Shane were in a battle. Shane tried to give it up, but Mark didn't quite take it. Andrew actually offered to buy us pizza, and Connor, for some reason, turned him down.
Why, man? He doesn't need that. He doesn't need.
Why
do
we not give? Why?
Because I told him I would buy my own pizza, and then
you're buying us pizza,
and then I'll do a toast in remembrance of him.
So you're buying us pizza.
Well, yeah. What? Which?
We're getting pizza, right? I mean, we're offered free pizza, and you turned it down.
Yeah, I don't understand what's going on right now. If you're listening, just send us
everyone
the
in the comments. Let us in the comments. Just,
I didn't give him my Venmo.
Can we make it like a?
I'm not doing
like,
that to him. He doesn't need that.
It'd be such a prank if you guys all like ordered all this pizza to us while we were shooting the podcast.
That would
man,
suck.
That'd be
oh
awful.
My gosh, we would all
what do we
that.
Do with it?
Like, so inconvenient.
Our addresses.
No, but let us know in the comments if you think that Connor should have to buy us pizza since he turned down.
I think he should buy us each a pizza now.
Pizza.
Hope you
it
guys
can
like
be a
Little
Caesars.
Caesars.
I don't
love
discriminate.
Little Caesars.
Anything but CC's, man.
I can get down with that. Yeah, dude. CC's is trash for sure. All right, FPL.
No, Dark Horse pick.
Dark Horse
That's
pick.
What we're about to get into. I'm taking Mark Chapalonis. Why, I don't exactly remember. I don't remember if it was his MVP performance or his GMC performance of last year, but he did something good, and I'm feeling he's about to do it again.
That's not good enough. I'm picking Tyler Grady. He's from up that way. I think he's from Maine. 996 rated. Seems to have had a decent season. Kind of just tours around up there. He looks like the type of guy that's a safe pick. He might not get the win, but he's definitely not going to lose. That's what I look for. Very aggressive player.
That's fair.
I think you just paralyzed.
I think I just died. What do you got, Cotter? Who are you picking?
Well,
you already told us who you're picking, so why are you scrolling?
Because I have an interesting development.
Oh, someone DM'd you?
As of 5 minutes ago, I got a DM about a Dark Horse pick.
Dang.
Wow, somebody's on to you.
Perfect timing.
Are they offering pizza?
No, not
he'll
yet.
He'll probably just refuse it. So
he'll probably just turn it down anyway. Yeah.
So I got a DM literally like 5 minutes ago. He said, "Connor, I'm likely not the smartest Dark Horse pick for today's podcast."
How'd that work for you last week?
And I will have to say I agree that he's probably not the smartest because he spelt my name wrong after finding me on Instagram. He found me on Instagram, sent me a DM, and then spelled it C-O-N-N-O-R.
Nice.
But I will say,
not even the K.
What probably happened, he probably spelt it right, and then his phone changed it to that, because that happens like on, my phone finally doesn't do that. But anyway, so he said, "Connor, I'm likely not the smartest Dark Horse pick for today's podcast, but I have been shooting some good rounds recently, and I'm really hoping to do well at GMC this weekend." So he's 957 rated, but he says that he's been shooting in his last three rounds he shot above 1,000 rated, and his last nine round, or he's also shot a lot like in the high 900s. So he said that he will try as hard as he can to beat whoever you guys' picks are. He's 18
I love
years
this
old.
New tradition.
He's 18 years old.
Yeah, I love wins, that. Man. I love that Connor just picks whoever DMs him. And just rolls with
Can
it.
We get some like even lower rated players to DM Connor.
Yeah, if
like,
you're 900 rated and you're playing in, are we gonna do Dark Horse or Battle for Bedford?
No.
Then for Music City.
Are we boring you?
if you're 900 rated and you're playing Music City, DM Connor.
Well, I messaged him back and I said, "Literally shooting the podcast now. Perfect timing. You are my pick. May the odds be ever in your favor."
That's so funny.
Wow.
So can you tell him that he owes us a pizza?
No. He's 18.
Somebody owes us pizza.
So he doesn't have money to buy his pizza?
He's 18. He doesn't know what pizza is.
He hasn't discovered that part of life yet.
He is a legal adult. He can get his pizza.
No, that's Connor's so cool. buying
Better
his pizza.
Better than an illegal adult.
We'll tweet the picture. We'll tweet the picture out once Connor buys us a pizza.
Them little skeezies.
Not a piece of pizza. A large. I want a large cheese and pizza, please.
I'm just gonna get you a block of cheese.
I would take
as long
that.
As it's on a.
If I have crackers, I have some crackers too.
As long as it's on bread with some tomato sauce and toasted, I don't care what you get me. Just make it pizza.
This episode is blurring the lines between Bogey Bro Banter and Grip Locked.
So if you enjoyed this episode, check out our Patreon. You can get it every week. FPO, predictions. Paige Pierce is going to win this weekend. She's bouncing back. Katrina Allen's going to come in second. And then Lisa Fakus is coming in third.
I literally dread making these picks every week.
There's just no way of knowing.
It's just ridiculous. I also picked Paige and Kat, and then I just put Haley King in.
Haley
third.
King did have a good performance last year.
She almost won last year. But, like, I don't know. I have no idea what's going to happen.
No one does. That's the beauty of disc golf.
It's a mystery.
It's a beautiful sport, really. Let's paint you in a scenario for a make that call. That's
make
actually
that
it's pretty great.
Call.
Was that a sting?
Yeah.
So if you didn't know, a sting is actually what you make that call. So, Trevor, you're playing in a tournament.
I was about to start telling the soft serve ice cream story. It's gone too long.
Yeah, so Trevor.
It's a great story from my past. I'll tell it some other time.
You're telling the banter.
Okay.
So Trevor, you're playing in a tournament, and you make the great decision to go to Taco Bell for lunch. A few holes in, everything's great. You're enjoying life.
Yeah.
Hole five rolls
Bell.
Around.
I haven't had it in a while.
She's a gordita crunch.
I'm going to Taco Bell.
Hole five rolls around, and you start to question everything.
Oh, man.
On hole six, you tell your group, "I can't do this anymore," and you run off the course to the bathroom.
How do they say it? Like, when I said, "I can't do this anymore," like, it reenact how I said it.
Oh, no. Oh, I can't do this anymore.
Thank you. Thank you for
off.
That.
That's a really good
off.
Visualization.
And you run off to the bathroom. So they give you as much time as they legally can in the rules.
Man.
But they ended up
in trouble.
They end up finishing hole six, and they're about to tee on hole seven when you catch back up to them.
It doesn't matter how old you get. Taco Bell poop jokes are always funny. Okay.
You catch back up to them
so
on hole
I
seven.
I missed a hole.
So you run up. You're like, what do I do? Like, can you keep playing? Do you have to DNF? If you do keep playing, how do you do it, and what's the penalty?
I just missed a hole.
Yeah, so you're middle of your round. Leave the course, go to the bathroom. Now you're back to the course. Well, you missed the entire hole.
Man, you're confuzzling me because, well, I know
what's the rule.
I know the par plus four rule is
if you show up late.
Is like showing up late, but I don't know. I don't know if there's like a contingency if you leave, and then if it's for the bathroom. Hear that cricket? It's my brain right now. Because I feel like you wouldn't just give this to me and be like, yeah, it's just par plus four if you're missing a hole. That is interesting. I wonder if there's going to be like a specific ruling, but then there's like a loophole to the rule. Like I could just walk back and tap into the last basket and just get a misplay instead of whatever else is coming to me. A jail sentence, perhaps. I don't know.
I'm not saying anything.
I'm just going to say par plus four for that hole that I missed. And then you can give me the correct ruling.
That is the correct ruling.
Oh.
So this type...
You were trying to throw me off the scent.
I was trying to throw you off the scent. Everyone to be thrown off that scent. That is a type of misplay known as a missed hole due to late arrival or absence. You get par plus four on the hole.
I was wondering if there was going to be like... It's like actually like...
I didn't know the answer.
DNF, and then like, but if you go back and like tap into the last hole, like you can like loophole it and get like...
Yeah, when I read that, I didn't know the answer because I was like... I don't know, because like, does it apply the same if you leave in the middle of a round?
I'm just a rules expert.
Turns out,
how many penalty strokes would he get for cracking the toilet bowl?
Yeah, all I'm thinking about is that poor toilet. I wouldn't be. I could be less bothered about what happened on hole six. Yeah. I'll tell you what
it's
happened.
More about the
in
Nacho
the
Bell Grande that happened.
Yeah, that gordita crunch. No cinnamon twists. All right.
Baja blasted that toilet.
Hope you all enjoyed this episode. We'll talk to you all next week.
A Kings Island Gold Pass is your ticket to unlimited visits this year and all through 2025. Make the park your own with access to 2 years of tricks and treats, Halloween Haunt, and Winterfest. Plus an expanded Soak City featuring the all-new dual racing water coaster River Racers coming in 2025. All for our lowest price of the season. Just 10 payments of $9 after initial payment plus applicable taxes and fees. Hurry, price goes up September 3rd. Get your Gold Pass at visitkingsisland.com.
She said, get out the chat room and clean my
Glad stretch. Feeling fine, so fresh.
The Glad Girl Group coming at you with a throwback jam. That was Glad Force Flex Drawstring Trash Bags featuring Pine Sol Original Scent. And that's better than all good. It's all Glad.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat. Literally. But don't sweat it. Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
High Five Casino lets you play your favorite slot and live table games, like blackjack, with the chance to redeem for real cash prizes. High Five Casino has a giant selection of over 1,200 games, including hundreds of exclusive games only found on High Five Casino. It's always free to play, and free coins are given out every 4 hours. Ready to have your own High Five moment? Visit HighFiveCasino.com. That's high, the number five, casino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. Must be 21 years or older. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then, learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.